One is from the minister and the deputy minister that will be joining the meeting later on. They are receiving visitors from Ghana. And Honorable Kenya will be joining the meeting late. She's taking her child to the hospital. And Honorable Chwete is not in today. Her child is also sick. And Honorable Papa will join us later. She has classes today until 10 o'clock. That's the apologies I've got for the day. Thank you, Chairperson.
To that in mind, from the members, we will now go to the agenda. Today's agenda is as follows. Briefing by the Department on the finalization of the National Policy of the Management Awards and interview of policy guidelines as the committee decisions. Then we will also have a presentation by the National Coalition for Social Services, a presentation by the National Welfare Forum, and a presentation by the children's sector. We were supposed to discuss the oversight report, but not the staff here today. So I want to propose that we defer it to the next sitting of the committee. Is that fine with all the members? We only received the presentation by the department yesterday. Who is representing the department here today? Is it Dr. Mobeta?
Yes.
Yeah. Dr. Mobeta, I want to express my displeasure at the late submission of the presentation to this committee. This did not give the committee time enough to reflect on the content of the presentation. So this will be the last time that the committee will suffer this inconvenience. Please convey my displeasure to the DG. The minister will be joining us on the mat. It also then implies that the committee will have to defer its discussion of this presentation to the next portfolio committee meeting. Honourable Member Kopane.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to join you on the point that you just said. Yesterday I phoned the DG in the chair of Postmodels because I realized around about 1 o'clock we have received the document. And for us as members of parliament to do our oversight effectively, we need to have the documents on time. According to the rules of parliament, 48 hours before the meetings, we need to have our documents. So really next time, Chairperson, we boycott this meeting. We won't come to the meeting if we don't receive the documents on time.
Ms. Honourable Member Kopane, that would be very, very irresponsible because it will not be the committee's fault for it. We shouldn't have made a ruling on the matter. That is the one issue. Well, then I think what we will have to do is to evaluate whether we should do it or not, even before the committee meeting happens on the matter. But it's also a matter, I think, that I will take over the minister after this meeting.
Okay. I want our stand to be noted that Democratic Alliance won't attend the meeting unless we got the document before time, according to the rules of parliament.
We go on to item one. The briefing by the Department on the finalization of the National Policy and Financial Awards and Inquiry of Policy Guidelines. Dr. Mabeto, will you lead the presentation? Okay. We will then give, after the department, we will give, we'll only have questions of clarity. Then, after social development, will be the National Coalition, the National Welfare Forum, and the Children's Sector, and then we will engage in questions. Over to you.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Chairperson, and Honourable Member, and colleagues, and other members from the NGO sector that are here. We just want to We would like to turn an apology on behalf of the DG who's unable to come to the community meeting in Mozambique.
And well, I'm here with
my friends and people in Chitali,
the exchange treaty in Mozambique, and then the chief director. Financial services transformation in Shondomani, and the director of the director for this specific program, service provider management and support. We would all apologize profusely for the late submission of the document. It will not happen again. We promise. Our presentation, just for outline of the presentation. To brief the portfolio committee on the policy on financial awards to service providers and the national guidelines on the NPO financing. Our brief will go further to brief the portfolio committee also on the review of the policy on financial awards, just to indicate where have we made changes and for what purpose were those changes made. As far as the background is concerned, I think we will all remember that as early as, you know, 1994, when the Department of Social Development was established, and as early as 1996, when the white paper on social welfare was developed and adopted, it was realized at that time that the huge percentage of the financial allocations dispersed by the department to non-profit organizations went more to benefited the most established and well-resourced organizations. Things could have changed a little bit at the moment because we've got quite a huge number of CBOs that are benefiting from transfers that are delivering services at community level, especially the home community-based care organizations are getting transfers from the department. But since things at the provincial level and national level has not changed much. This funding approach has over the years dramatically reinforced the racially skewed urban bias and distribution of services. There's been transformation that has taken place, but not satisfactorily, we should say. This has not assisted the department to respond to delivery backlogs in poor and rural areas. We all know that when you go to rural areas and you go to poor areas, the services of the Department of Social Development are not visible enough. And it is a reality that the department delivers these services through the provinces and also through the NGO sector, the faith-based organizations and community-based organizations. And this approach has also not equally enabled the department to respond to its transformation agenda and imperatives, including those of, you know, the government in its broadness. In response to these concerns that I've just managed in terms of how we allocate funding to the NGOs and the skewed manner in which the allocations have been, you know, managed at this moment, or the approach that has been used, you know, since, you know, the past, the department introduced the policy on financial awards in 2005, with effect from April 2005. The policy has served as a guide to the national and provincial departmental partnership with the NGO sector. This policy was approved by MINMEC, it was approved by all sectors, it was also consulted. The policy sought to ensure the achievement of the departmental strategies
specifically with regard to the delivery of social welfare services in partnership with the NGO sector. This partnership has continued to be characterized by concerns and various challenges, although we have the policy on financial awards, key amongst which has been around the effectiveness of the policy and more critically, the departmental funding relationship with the NGO sector. Over the period of 5 years, while implementing the policy, numerous concerns from various stakeholders with regards to the its ineffectiveness were received and raised by stakeholders. And during the financial year 2009 and 10, a desktop analysis was conducted by the department with an engagement of the NPO sector and provinces, which revealed, this desktop analysis revealed a number of gaps in the policy, in the policy on financial awards. These are the gaps, I'll just go through them quickly. There was a lack, the main gap is that there's a lack of uniformity in the implementation of the policy across provinces. Although we had implementation plans and every province had to indicate how they were going to implement the policy, but there were gaps in the manner in which the policy was implemented. I just want to say we have moved the slides, you know, they are not sequentially in the manner in which it's presented because we realized that there was no flow when we prepared ourselves last night for this presentation. It's the same content, but we've moved one slide maybe ahead of another, so that the presentation can make sense. The national and provincial roles and responsibility in relation to NPO financing were not clearly defined. So there was a confusion between what national is doing and what provincial department could do as far as financing of the NPOs are concerned. You'll find at national level, we'll find provincial, NGOs, so it brought a lot of confusion. The policy was not aligned to the various newly approved departmental pieces of legislation. Because it was developed in 2005 and implemented in 2005, there were a lot of gaps. You remember that that was the time during which we were deliberating on the Children's Act, on the Older Persons Act, and the Substance Abuse Act. So the requirements for those pieces of legislation and some of the policies were not factored in the policy on financial awards. Inadequate financing of statutory services results as a result of that gap. Different procurement approaches that are used for the financing of NPOs within the social service sector continue to promote inequitable distribution of resources. Because of the lack of uniformity, you find that provinces have different ways, even within the same province, in a manner in which they funded the NPOs. So, lack of disclosures of resources of financing by non-profit organizations. You find that one organization is richer than the other one because they're getting funding, from all over the place, even from other departments. Hence, we had a situation of multiple DPs by certain NGOs. The alignment to service delivery norms and standards. These were also developed later when we developed the service delivery, the integrated service delivery model. So there were also other norms and standards, like the Children's Care Act has got its own norms and standards, but they came later, so they were not sort of paired with their policy and financial awards. Lack of capacity within the NPO sector linked to the recruitment and retention strategy. Sorry for the acronyms, that's retention and recruitment strategy. Delays in the transfers of funds to NPOs, even at national and both at provincial level, we were not transferring funds to NGOs on time, and this created major problems as far as service delivery is concerned. Non-compliance of NPOs to the NPO Act, and even to the service level agreements in terms of proper reporting. The Free State High Court judgment also identified some of the gaps in the policy, which are more or less the same. I think, as we know, there was in the Free State, the NGO sector, Nangogo, took the department to court, to High Court, and these were the main challenges that were identified in the court order. The subsidization, which does not cover the financing of services adequately, ineffective implementation of new pieces of legislation, lack of uniformity, disparities in financing of MPOs across province, in the same province, and delays in the transfers of payments to MPOs. And the Free State was found to be unconstitutional in the manner in which they were allocating funds to the NGOs. In addition, MINMEC and the heads of social development sector, these are the DG and the heads, the HODs, they requested the department to review the policy on financial awards. That was around 2008 and 2009, to address the gaps identified during its implementation period. Additional gaps also emanated from the Free State judgment, as I said. Further gaps were also received from the Joint Strategic Committee. In the meantime, while we were implementing this policy, we formed a committee with the NPOs, the department, and the NPOs at national level. It is referred to as a Joint Strategic Committee. This committee represents other NGOs within Nangogo. The policy, so we also took some of the concerns and challenges that were identified by the NPOs into consideration when we reviewed the policy. The policy was reviewed and approved by Heads of Social Development and MINMEC in March 2011, respectively, for implementation and for phased-in approach. There was a sense of urgency when this policy was reviewed because the Heads of Social Development and MINMEC agreed that there's a huge gap as far as the service delivery is concerned, and they wanted this policy to be implemented as soon as possible. So in this financial year, we're preparing ourselves with plans and tools and everything that is needed to be able to fully implement the policy in the next financial year. However, we're aware that there are still inputs that can be made, and those inputs will be taken into consideration. The policy is not set it can still be strengthened and improved where it's necessary, so long as we're not moving away from the main policy direction. The rationale of the policy, the thrust of the reviewed policy hinges on the following. The approach that DFC takes charge of its relationship to the NPO sector and also takes the lead in mobilizing and transforming the sector. The DG always says, it seems in the past the department was always informed by the NGO as to where the needs are. In this instance, we need to turn things around. The department has to take the responsibility and indicate where it wants services to be delivered in the country. The policy seeks to position the department to assume its leadership position towards the effective management of financing services delivered by the NPOs within the social development sector. Key areas introduced in the policy. The following key areas have been strengthened, introduced in the new policy, in the reviewed policy, I would say. This is not a new policy, the same policy that that was implemented. The only thing is reviewed and improved it. The view is to address the gaps and challenges identified through policy implementation, the SOP analysis, Free State High Court judgment, and input from the NPOs. These are the areas that have been improved. The partnership it was there in the other policy, but we just enhanced it. The transformation has been enhanced, service specification enhanced, and the new approach altogether, which was in the old policy as part of others, is the financing, new way of financing NGOs. With regards to partnership, the policy recognizes the significance of partnerships and strives for the improvement and clarification of relationship between DAB and the NGO sector. It acknowledges that partnership allows the levels of consultation and negotiation that will ensure that services are equitably, effectively, and efficiently delivered. It emphasizes the strengthening of communication channels, unpacks and clarifies roles and responsibilities of DSD and the NPO sector at different levels, in fact, as we did in the integrated service delivery model. It echoes for the effective management of financing services delivered by the NPOs within the social development sector. These are the broad roles and responsibilities as reflected in the policy. That of the Department of Social Development is determination of priorities, development of guidelines and relevant legislative framework for financing of NGOs, proper monitoring and evaluation of services rendered by the NPO sector to ensure compliance to the policy, relevant guidelines and legislative framework. The intention is that this policy should ultimately be we should move towards developing legislation out of this policy so that whatever we do as far as our partnership with the NGOs is mandatory, and that will also help to finance the policy, because when we go to Treasury, we will not be talking about a policy, we'll be talking about, you know, legislative mandate. Further, the roles and responsibilities of the department is provision of leadership and guidance in the implementation of the policy, providing a strategic direction in service delivery, ensuring the development and implementation of integrated intersectoral policies and programs, both at national and provincial level, harmonizing central functions with those of other national departments, provincial departments, and other role players, including the NDA. At the moment, it seems there's a lot of fragmentation and duplication, and we want to harness that and manage that properly. Developing quality assurance system for the delivery of welfare services. We have to ensure capacity building and institution building of both ourselves and that of the NGO sector. Promote partnership and linkages with other key role players. Procure services in line with government priorities and provide financial support to projects and programs within available resources. The roles and responsibilities of the NPOs in the partnership is compliance with the NPO Act and other relevant policies and legislation. Provide services in accordance with the prescribed services norms and standards. Ensure that their organizations provide transformed, efficient, and equitable services. Ensure that the organization's governance structure are representative of the demographic of the communities they serve. Adhere to the departmental NPO financing guidelines and other related policies. Be accountable to government for any public funding received and report on activities in such a manner as prescribed in the service level agreement or contract. Also in the NPO Act, the research requirement. The second issue that was added into the or factor that was added into the or enhanced in the policy is transformation. This entails the fact that the department has to take leadership in the effective management of the financing of NPOs, focus on the empowerment of emerging NPOs. After the dawn of democracy, attempts were made to reach out to emerging and new organizations, but not much progress has been made. They're still remaining at that level, and they're not simply growing and moving from one strength to another. And we need to find out what is going on. Why are these NGOs not becoming stronger, so that they can, some of them can even go into national NGOs. Facilitate the provision of support to such organizations to be responsive to the policy. Facilitation of responsiveness to transformation imperatives by funded NPOs and the department to monitor responsiveness to transformation imperatives both internally and externally. There are more details in the policy which also look at the criteria. What kind of criteria are we going to use as a department? How are we going to maybe monitor and evaluate transformation within the sector? What indicators will be there? The indicators are in the policy that for an organization to be transformed, these are the things that it should be doing. Or this at a broader level, for example, in social development, we should see a bigger transformation where all NGOs are almost more or less on the same level, or there's a lot of activity in terms of capacity building of the CBOs. Service specification. I think this was what was lacking in the previous policy, service specification, and hence we believe that, you know, the provinces and NGO, everything didn't seem to be well organized because we did not define the services that has to be delivered through the policy. The more emphasis is on the rationale for service specification, determination of priorities for service delivery at either national or provincial level. These are to be informed by, among others, government priorities, the outcomes that we are at the moment implementing, research, statistics, demand for service delivery, and of course the needs of the community at community level. We have the service specification will also determine where, to whom, and for what purpose funding will be allocated. So each province must have those service specifications. In the policy itself, we have listed the types of services, you know, services to children, older persons, you know, as broad as we could, so that it guides the provinces. It also guides the NGOs when they, you know, write out their business plan or their proposals. It should be within those parameters. If we go outside those parameters, there should be an explanation, you know, why we're adding or why we're excluding some of the areas. The next element that was added or introduced in the policy is the new financing approach. In order to address the challenges identified, specifically with regard to the financing of statutory services, this chapter proposes the following: a move from subsidization to program financing in accordance with the national norms and standards and the costing model to ensure uniformity. We know that this financing, the mode of financing was in the policy, the previous policy, or is still there, but it was amongst others, you know, so there was no focus on a move from subsidization. The provinces are still providing funding in accordance to subsidization. To an extent, certain extent, even at national, we're doing that. So this policy, with this review policy, will be moving from subsidization to program financing. Financing based on departmental priorities and affordability, that's program financing. The program financing is based on identifying needs and availability of financial resources. It is also based on procurement of services through calls for proposals for well-established NPOs. We know we've got two different NPOs in the country, those that are well-established and have been established a long time ago, and there are those that are very, very new, and they need to be capacitated. So we cannot use the same approach for both. While we're doing program financing, we will request, you know, proposals from the established NPOs, And then we will also request proposals from the emerging NPOs, but with an element of capacitating them. So that is referred to as program development. That it means capacitating emerging NPOs for their empowerment to access departmental funding. Because if we say to all and everyone, we're calling for proposals to deliver services in this specific area, let's say Khayelitsha, we'll have only the well-established NPOs that will come with splendid proposals. But the NPOs in Khayelitsha will not be able to come up with such splendid proposals. So they'll be definitely be left out in accessing funding. This new approach, program funding, there's a linkage of proposal to service demands and realities. So they will need every province to have to have a situation analysis. We know that at a municipality level we've got those situation analysis, so we are asking the provinces to use as much information as possible that describes the needs in their provinces. NPO financing timelines will be linked to the MTF PROT and the NPO financing guidelines. So we also move with program funding, you need to move from once-off funding or one-year funding, all those kinds of off-seat funding, all those kinds of funding that did not make any improvement in the way in which we fund our services. So it will be program funding over the three medium-term framework periods. And then if you've got a service level agreement with the NPO, it means every year you just review it. You do not come up with a new contract, because coming up with new contract is wasting time. Because you have to go through the entire process, it involves the legal service in the departments, and it takes long. That's why it takes long to transfer funds. Disclosure by NPOs to prevent multiple dipping for the same services will be one of the things that will be required through this funding. Removal of other types of financing, as I've said, will be provided. We have the NGA and other entities that do assist to provide funding for other services. This is mainly, it's really mainly for welfare services, this program funding, because that's where the problem lies currently. Community development programs will be funded through NPOs and capacity building, and training. The implementation of the policy. This policy will be implemented by both national and provincial departments of social development in line with the NPO funding financing guidelines. The national department will provide leadership and guidance as stipulated within the policy section on roles and responsibilities. What we've realized is that at national, I think we really changed our role in terms of taking leadership. So from now on, national will take the leadership and support the provinces in implementing this policy. Provinces should take responsibility for ensuring effective and proper implementation, monitoring and reporting by funded organizations. We will have our own monitoring and evaluation system at national, but the provinces will have their own, but they should talk to one another so that when they report, the reporting is uniform, and so that we are able to make sense of what is being reported and where are the gaps in the system. The institutional arrangement, the department will establish a national forum for the following purposes. This forum will be made up of ourselves at national, provincial departments, and the NPO sector. The purpose is the adoption of a collective approach and joint preparation for the policy implementation. We have such a forum, but at the moment it's still within the department, and we're going to have a meeting on this Friday. We'll be invited to the NGO sector just to inform them and see how we can create this forum. The NPO coordination and management, monitoring of effective and efficient service delivery and effective reporting, facilitation of improved interaction with all key stakeholders at all levels, especially at community level, The forum will also serve a purpose of communication, so that if there are problems, we are able to address them as timely as possible and as effectively as possible. At the current moment, we get concerns all over the place because we don't work in a well-coordinated manner. I think with the institutional arrangements, the provinces will also have their own forums where they meet with the NGOs. I know that many provinces have got such forums, but the terms of reference should be the same across the board. The following administrative mechanisms and tools will support and give effect to the implementation of the policy. The national norms and standards. We had a big project of the development of national norms and standards. That project has come to a close. What we are looking at the moment is to finalize the human resource model for the norms and standards. And also, what needs to be finalized? I think it's mainly the human resource model that needs to be finalized. To assess the readiness of the provincial departments to implement the norms and standards, because the norms and standards come with the requirements for certain capacity to be available in their implementation at all levels. So we've got high norms and standards level, and we've got the practice types of norms and standards. We've got the national baseline costing models, which we're also developing, and they'll be finalized, we hope, before the end of this year, by December. The NPO, we also have the NPO financing guidelines, which are ready for implementation. And then the integrated service delivery model, currently referred to as a social welfare service model. What do we have? Should I stop?
Now, just being excited by the sound, the president of Ghana is in town.
So we can reach him. Okay. What we want to report here is that the integrated service delivery model that was approved and implemented in 2005 is still in full operation. However, when we developed the norms and standards, we realized that we needed to change, a number of certain things in that service delivery model. So we only effected changes in the social welfare service framework. And what we are going to do, we are going to distribute this welfare services framework to everyone. It defines the welfare service very clearly, and it's a supporting document for the new norms and standards. And it also uses the life cycle approach as compared to the previous one, which did not use the life cycle approach. And it has also defined the services and categorize them differently than the previous one. The guidelines. Now we come to the guidelines very quickly. The guidelines were developed parallel to the review process of the policy. They give effect to the implementation of the policy. They assist both the national and provincial departments towards the effective implementation of the policy to address major gaps identified in the current departmental financing system, to serve as a guide towards uniform implementation of the policy on financial awards. The guidelines are built around establishing partnerships as a form of funding NPOs for sustainable community service delivery. They revolve around strengthening the capacity of provinces to manage the process of NPO funding. They depart from the promise that NPO funding is a financial transition that must adhere to financial legislation and policies. They prescribe funding approaches, processes, and steps for funding NPOs. They prescribe tools to be used by provinces and prescribe time frames. So so that we no longer pay, you know, late or deal with expense that trickles, you know, throughout the year. The guidelines act as planning and management tools for the provinces. They serve as a support to the implementation of the PSA. To guide the guidelines provide the frames on when to contract NPOs, transfer funds and reporting periods. They provide framework for coordinating provinces on NPO funding. There will be no delays as they will be reminded by National. We also are going to use those guidelines in monitoring the provincial departments and ourselves, of course. The proposed capacity for the NPO funding and management. The guidelines are objective in nature and address needs of the department, and they provide uniformity in NPO funding, and they provide tools for the NPO funding and management. The guidelines are divided into different elements. The institutional arrangements for NPO funding, the guidelines propose appropriate capacity of national and provinces to deal with NPO funding, because you will not fund the NPO or transfer funds adequately timelessly if you don't have capacity. They propose process on NPO funding, identification of the need for contracting, preparation of NPO funding, for example, a project plan. Each province must have a project plan as how they are going to deal with NPO funding on a yearly basis. Establish NPO business plan, evaluation project team. And then the third one is management of funded NPOs, the M&A system and indicators, which should be uniform across the country, and reporting schedules. Steps for NPO funding that comply to the supply chain management. Call for proposals must be prepared and approved. Advert for 30 days for both formal and informal and formal. Briefing session to special adjudication teams. Recommendation and awarding of transfers and signing of service level agreement. This is the guideline on or the route, you know, on which we'll follow in terms of from the call for proposal to the transfer of the first tranche to the NPO. So the call for proposals, for example, will happen in October, November. This year, October, November, there's going to be a call for proposal at national and provincial level. In December, January, we deal with the financial administration processes, adjudications, and choosing of the NPO that we will feel that it will deliver services appropriately, the type of services that is required in that specific area. The service level agreements will be signed around February, March, so that by April, because our money is available in April, the first tranche is allocated to the NGOs that have been selected to deliver services in various areas. The NPO financing time frame, aligned to the MTF period. Funding of NPO will be linked to the MTF, as I said. Yearly project evaluation and appraisals to be linked to the contract. So the contract is for 3 years, but it will be appraised and evaluated on a yearly basis, so that if there are changes, those changes can be affected. The policy implementation plan, the provinces have to develop migration plans that will reflect their peculiarities and requirements to ensure that they progress within reasonable time frames towards full implementation of policy. When we say migration plan, we don't mean migrating from a certain area to another. We mean the implementation, gradual implementation of the policy, but really also migrating resources, you know, ensuring that there's equitable provision of resources across the province. 2011 and 12 is earmarked as a preparatory year towards migration from the current situation. we're meeting on a regular basis with the provinces to ensure that we've got all our ducks in a row in preparing for next year. The department will facilitate the development of monitoring and evaluation system. The National Department of Social Development will also take the overall responsibility of supporting provinces towards migration and effective implementation of the policy. It means we are going to be scrutinizing the implementation plans and the migration plans from each province and be satisfied that they are on the right track as far as this policy is concerned. The implementation plans or the migration plans from the provinces should entail the following. Each province should conduct its own situation analysis. Most provinces have got that information already. Others are collecting it now. They have to have service specifications. They have to have those implementation plans or migration plans. We at National have to finalize the costing models as well as the norms and standards so that by next year, April, we're ready for implementation. We need to have a communication strategy to popularize the policy. And as I said on Friday, we're going to have a meeting with the NPO sector just to make them aware of the policy and its implications. And the capacity building of all stakeholders is very critical. So we capacitate government officials, NGO officials, and so when you start implementation, we're sure everybody is on the same page. And then the continuous monitoring and evaluation. Even now when we are preparing, we have to start evaluating ourselves to check where we are. In conclusion, Chairperson, the policy and guidelines will be implemented in a phased-in approach starting from 2012-13. The further consultation with schools, with stakeholders will be continued with to ensure comprehensiveness and maximum impact. Issues of transformation will be given more attention to address service delivery gaps and challenges, especially in rural areas. Support to provinces will be provided continuously. Yes. That's the end. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Yadeja. Questions of that? None? Questions from members? No questions from members. We should move over to the National Coalition of Social Services. I've asked the any questions from members that you have. Okay, there's two hands up.
You mentioned of the CDOs, organization, faith-based organizations, and NGOs working together with the department. I wonder if the department can finish then the committee with those top NGOs. Most of the NGOs are still mostly in the urban and township areas. In the rural provinces, because I don't know now, in the past, they used to apply through the National Office of Social Development, NGOs, hence, they were not much familiar with the rural areas. Again, I just want to check if the department assists them in completing the business plan, because they can come up with a concept, but the delays will be for completing the business plan to get funding. And other things, the monitoring evaluations for those who are funded by the department. I don't think the department is doing enough to monitor this, especially those that are getting big funding, the payment for the changes. Thank you, Chair.
Are you a member for finance?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation, Dr. Mabibo. I'm getting the following questions. The first question
approach regarding the consultation, that is the worrying factor. If you remember the judgment that was made by the Supreme Court, which involved the National Association for Women's Organization and the non-governmental organization and others. But now the question is, this organization that the department reports, they feel that the proper consultation still was not done after the judgment was put on the table. May you kindly just clarify why the proper consultation, they were not consulted when this draft was made. So people still feel that they are still left out. If maybe you can ask, you can answer that question. Secondly, the other issue that we deal with the sustainability of this sector, the presentation or the policy that contains very little regarding the strategy to ensure the sustainability of the NPO sector. May you kindly just tell us how we're going to do so, because presently just said that the tender may be added annually. And we strongly believe that social welfare program can only operate effectively within, cannot operate within such an insecure context if maybe annually people will be given a tender. And the other question is about the capacity for NGO. My question is why the big programs or NGOs that have been there in this sector for a very long time, they told me that they are capable of running their finance, their service effectively. Why can't the department try to utilize those NGOs to make those that the small ones that are coming? And lastly, given the national and the provincial department capacity problem in, so I want to find out how the department is going to implement this current financial policy, because presently there is a lack of capacity within both the national and the provincial departments.
Thank you. Some of my questions have now been asked, but I am also and for the other ones. My first question is on slide 35 on each province and each province situational analysis. I'd like to know if all provinces are now up to date or are they still building the process, and which provinces did not submit anything as yet. And then my next question is on slide, on page 15, guidelines propose appropriate capacity. My question then is, if this is a really huge challenge to the department, and will the budget be sufficient to allow the department to address, this challenge? And my next question is, are all NPOs aware of what is expected from them and what they in turn need to do? That entails the criteria that they need to follow, because up till now I don't even think that the department really assists the NPOs the way they should. My next question is it true, is the fact that NPOs will now receive their finance or their grants or their funds every 3 months? And if it is so, what will happen to those who are really capable of running these proper services? Here I refer to the huge problem that we have in the local province. NPOs not receiving their money, some people even receive their money of the last financial year, some is battling to get the money. Though they submit everything that is needed for that criteria and things, I think that's all there.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Dr. Malika, for the presentation. I would like to say well done for reviewing the policy, because the whole lot of things have been happening. And at the same time, this creates a problem for me to ask some of the questions, because like she said, that the policy review was done and approved in March this year for implementation in a phased-in approach. So most probably, most of the things are still happening now. The certain countries are in that position to say what are the chances, because it's just that way. But at the same time, I wanted to ask, on slide 8, slide 1 and 2, and slide 23, where it says the NPO's lack of disclosure of sources of financing and the multiple issues. And you know, it shows that really something had to be done to review the policy, because if we go to have one NPO receive funding from all departments, maybe for the same service that they are generating, it really shows that the problem. And another, I just wanted to know what is going to quickly to hear how is this compliance going to be done. And also the task, my colleagues have tasked on capacity building, I'm not going to go over now. Because what we found, the smaller ones, most of them will find when we go for oversight, they will be paying or whatever paying. We just do what we think is right. So I'm not going to ask now capacity building, but just on this, how is the department going to make sure that this doesn't happen? And then on slide 24, the next 3, where we're talking of monitoring and evaluation of problems. First, we should take responsibility of ensuring that we are incorporating the implementation, monitoring, and the process. I don't know how this is going to be done, because what I've noticed when we go around in the committee to do our oversight, we find that there are some provinces comply better than others when it comes to this issue of policies that have been implemented. Because why I'm saying this, I can give an example of some of the places that we went to, like in the Eastern Cape, where we really found there was a lot to be done as far as some of the NGOs and some funded organizations say. And so I just wanted to know, because I thought maybe the national would be better, it would be better if national was monitoring and evaluating those provinces. Because if they have to form a group and monitor and evaluate each other, I don't think we will get real correct reporting from them. And I just want to know, like, the question I suppose the policy that you were thinking about is, what is going to happen to the NGOs that are funded already, that are, maybe some of them are not complying presently? Thank
you. Now, in terms of the NGOs, we get NGOs, different kinds of NGOs. NGOs that that is such performers in the community. We get your FPOs, CPOs. And we get the CPOs, the NGOs, whatever it is, that someone that has gone on retirement can quickly establish an NGO program. And then it comes or feels entitled that government should subsidize the purpose. And then uses the networks to get or to try to get some funding. And some of these NGOs have a short lifespan. But you have genuine NGOs in our communities everywhere that has persevered over the years, even without funding, by being really innovative, because the strength of the NGO is also the network that you have. Always being on the lookout for new funders, for opportunities for funding, see what's in the market. You also have to market yourself continuously. And you build good relationships, whether it's with the state, corporates in the area, and so on. Now, when you get funding from government, or do we have a right? Also, let's go constitution. We also have a responsibility. What I don't see coming through in the presentation is the rights and responsibilities of NPOs vis-a-vis the government and the funds of the agent. If you could give me clarity on that. I think Honorable Abula and Parliament could have also touched on this, but not in the way that we're going to in terms of responsibility and accountability. That is very important. Now, the development of implementation plans, you say, are linked to project plans of provinces. Since you have certain time caps for implementation. This year is this financial year, 2011-2012, as seen as a preparatory. I want to know whether the National Department of Social Development is satisfied that all 9 provinces are at a level of preparation in terms of their project plans for next year's implementation, in this financial year's implementation. Now, the NCOP will obviously be in a better position to say, consider the interaction of provinces on the readiness as a committee and to the committee members. Because we know it's a social development role. You monitor the implementation of this policy in front. Now, coming to monitoring and evaluation, welcome our Honourable Minister of Social Development and Deputy Minister of Social Development. I find that I've started just running into questions without welcoming you. Please, you are not. The monitoring and evaluation of this policy and all other policies will be monitored and evaluated in such a news basis by the Department of Social Development. You also have monitoring and evaluation units for provinces. Are you relating them in terms of also establishing the readiness? And are you satisfied in terms of the policy needs that are there? I want to move this with a question of advocacy in terms of the development of implementation plans. And state of readiness. Do you think even those units at provincial level are adequately or will be adequately resourced to look at and to monitor the implementation of this policy? Then I'd like to know and I think we will be hearing this and maybe if the NGO organization can just note this also for when we engage in the presentations in terms of capacity of NGOs that they represent. Are they fully capacitated to take on to comply? Are they fully capacitated to comply? And what was I would like to ask the Department of Social Development, what was the impression that it got so far? You don't need to give a scientific evidence, but just in terms of the reports that we get to, we have a form from provinces and other services. So, what is your impression around that in terms of capacity? NGOs take big dollars all the time, we have new NGOs all the time, and then we have one that died off. So it's a really dynamic sector. So just those impressions. Can we take this round of questions and then we'll take a second round? We'll take a second round.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know whether our minister wants to say something or should we just respond? I will respond to a number of questions and then my colleagues will also assist me with those that are, you know, that are in the area of operation. With regard to sustainability of the NPO sector, because we are now introducing program funding, I think the policy is very clear that we did not want to take over the operations of the NPOs. The NPOs are entities in a community that also raises funds and gets support from the community. That is clear. But when it comes to having a contract with the department on delivering services on behalf of the department is responsible for those services. I think we have to tread very carefully here that we do not take over the management and the running of the NPO sector, otherwise they lose their independence. And that's the balance that Chairperson, that we need to be aware of at all the time. We are aware that we have the responsibilities at government, especially for statutory services, that's how we are introducing program funding. But at the same time, in terms of sustainability, we cannot continue funding organizations that are not delivering services that are required, that have been identified as critical by the department. I think that's where we stand. Those NGOs that are delivering services adequately as contracted in accordance to the service level agreement year in, year out, will continue receiving, you know, funding from the department in accordance to the service level agreement. And those who do not, we cannot keep on pouring money in a leaking, you know, in a leaking bucket. I think that's what we're saying with this new policy. Why can't the department use the NGO to mentor younger NGOs or the emerging NGOs? This is already happening because we are funding national NGOs that have in some of their activities the element of capacitating, you know, emerging NGOs. But this will need to be more deliberate as social development. You need to ensure that element is in, that in every province there will be NGOs that are capacitated, are getting funding from the department to capacitate the other NGOs. But as we said, we'll also use the NGA. I think Mr. Michipali can respond to that at length because that is area of operation. And then the lack of capacity, the readiness for the policy. Not all is perfect, we know, in the sector, in social welfare sector, as far as capacity is concerned. We are doing the best that we can with the available capacity. We have social workers, we've got a scholarship. We have, you know, child and youth care workers that were in the next financial year, we're going to start increasing in number through recruiting and training, quite about 10,000 of them. We've got the problem of the recruitment and training of social auxiliary workers. We've got community development workers. When we add on, we've got almost 33,000 social service professionals on the ground. I think the issue here is how do we use the current social service professionals available to us. That's something that we have to deal with through the NOMSA, the NOMSA standard, the Northern Standards model. I have said that we are looking at the human resource model that is linked to the Northern Standards. When we discussed it last week as a branch, we realized that we have many social service professionals, but the model is very important on how we utilize them and how we also ensure that the NGOs are well capacitated in terms of capacity. Capacitating the NGOs and so on, I'll leave it to Peter as well, that is the area of his or the areas that he works with in the branch. And then there was one question that I wanted to do. Monitoring and evaluation. We are going to have one system of monitoring and evaluation from national up to service delivery level, so that we improve on that. I know at the moment we don't know which NGOs have been supported by the province, how and so on. That information, we need to get it from the provinces. Mrs. Masilo will try and get the information. It is available of all the CBOs and FBOs that are being supported by the provinces. But we don't have that information in a standardized and uniform way. We have to get it now, as when it is needed by the department, or through, you know, by the entities like yourselves. So we'll provide that information. Okay, Annie? Yeah. Let Peter come in and come up to you.
Thanks, Chair, Minister, and Deputy Minister, and members. In terms of the capacity of NPOs, there is a challenge, because each year there are new NPOs that are registering. They come with varying types of capacity. What the department have done in the previous year is to develop a guideline on NPO capacity building, which is also linked to NDA. And each province was requested to look at first those that are funded, that they should be given capacity at a certain level. And I think that is taking place in most of the provinces. It might have taken not so fast, but it's taking place. There's a guideline that says all NPOs that are funded, they need to be evaluated, their capacity need to be evaluated, and they are provided with capacity appropriately. The way in which capacity need to be given varies. One way is to use bigger NPOs to provide mentoring of the small NPOs. But still on the other side of capacity, we need to view it as a developmental state. When a community organizations decide to register as a non-profit organization, the department provides capacity at that level for them to be able to understand the act and their responsibilities and their roles. And they are provided through what we call community development practitioners. That we propose it must continue in provinces, and I think it will continue to assist them in terms of understanding how to write business plans and how to submit them. The second part of it, the guideline that has been developed for this policy implementation, prescribes that provinces need to have a structure. Structure, we mean people that need to deal with NPOs at each level. And I think if we look back, you realize that already most of the provinces have got a structure. People that are responsible for funding NPOs and to deal with the issue of looking at the pockets of poverty, pockets of service needs, and the call for proposal of program developed in those areas so that those NPOs could be funded. It is there. It is not uniform though, but I think there is prescribed. The same is said, once an NPO is funded using a specification that they would have, request for funding, monitoring should be done on a monthly and a quarterly basis. What we hope to achieve is that through our national forum, Each province will report. We will have a database, which I think the minister will have, on all NPOs that are funded in provinces. And we will also then provide continuous capacity so that they know what to monitor the services that are they funded for. There was an issue of whether the national and the capacity. As we say, we are in the process of creating that capacity at even at national, so that we are able to monitor provinces appropriately and coherently. But I think one of the issues which we need to bear in mind is that the issues of NPO funding and South Africa as a country is very something we need to look at much more broadly, because services need to go to where it's needed most, which is the rural area. Those people in those areas need to be empowered to be able to deliver the service. So the approach is that we need to empower people in those rural areas so that they are able to deliver service for themselves. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. If I may just add on the capacity building before going to our question. So in the funding that we've been providing to NGOs all along, also included funding for NPO to ask for funding for capacity building. So in their business plan, they would include that as part of that, which I think we're going to in the new policy begin to look much more deeper into that, because in some instances it will lead to duplication, whereas we provide funding in terms of their business plan for them to procure training in whatever form. But we have realized that that might maybe lead to duplication, because we'll be bringing in NPA even much more to look at those areas. But I just want to indicate that that has been happening all along. Maybe just to go to some of the questions that have been raised regarding the situation analysis, as well as all provinces up to date with regard to that. Chair, we are aware that most of the provinces have got this information of where the priorities are within their provinces. We're saying as a preparatory phase, provinces will begin to use that information. And I also say that all along, provinces have been using that information. They were not just funding NGOs blindly, except that there were those NGOs, as you indicated, Chair, that looked like they were sort of entitled to this funding, but provinces are beginning to venture into that. They were also working closely with the municipalities in terms of the IDPs information that is there. But as national, we're formalizing this, we bringing in the population unit, which will begin to sort of formalize this, come up with a framework on how we'll be looking at it. But currently, provinces have got that information. And there's a question that followed that on whether provinces are know what is expected of them in terms of the implementation of the policy. I think Dr. Mabitwa in the presentation elaborated on the plan that we have to implement the policy. We have started consulting with provinces to sort of brief them, train them on this new policy. We will be touching on that. I think in the number of areas, even on the costing models, where we have touched up on all provinces, we including almost everybody in the province, starting from the local branches, where you have those managers at local, district, and regional level, not only in welfare, but also all our supporting units, particularly finance. So we hope, I think, they'll be getting much more information. And then there is a workshop that is coming on Friday. I think Dr. Marita also alluded to that, where we will be workshopping the NGOs. I think this will not be the last one. We will be also going even much more down we're talking them, consulting them, like Dr. Marito indicated, that this policy was cast in stone. We'll be taking some of those inputs, maybe for future improvement of the policy. Then there was also a question followed by that one, whether is it a fact that NPO will receive money every 3 months. Dr. Mavito indicated that the labor intensiveness of this current process where NPOs will have to make submitted claims on a monthly basis, which is very cumbersome to our provinces. But Chair, may I indicate that a number of provinces have since moved long time ago from that process, funding NGOs on a 3 month basis. In her presentation, we looked at the issue of this link to an MTF period with a yearly renewal of this contract. So those issues are actually addressed. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Parliament. I look at the reports that we are receiving live. Thank you very much. Firstly, I think what is important for all of us is that community development and welfare services is where we develop a strong relationship between civil society and the government. And I think that should be our starting point. But also, what we found out is that programs, as Nechikani has said, programs that NPOs have, some of them, are not the priorities of the government. We all know that the government has priorities as well as health outcomes. So our focus is going to be more on those that are focusing on the priorities of the government. But also, we have not been focusing on community-based organizations. They are always sidelined because they are in townships or in informal settlements, and they are not looked after. It's always those NGOs that are in town or those that are driven through suitcases and families that are affluent that have been getting funding. Now, we are trying to move to communities because, for instance, if you look to substance abuse, one, the fees are very exorbitant, and we want to be able to prescribe for NPOs or NGOs that deal with substance abuse. But also aftercare for substance abuse should be at a local level. And it's not there because everyone wants to be in town. So if we say funding goes to communities, we're going to motivate everyone to work at a local level, which is going to give more outcomes. And then also the issue that has been there is that our people, the NGOs collapse at a local level because there isn't anyone who is giving guidance. So we've agreed that no one is going to be turned back because he has submitted a poor profile. If a person submits a poor profile, MDA and community development must sit with those people, guide them on how to do a profile, and that should be coupled with a capacity building and incubation. Because if you just give money to someone and not have a plan of incubation, those things don't work together. One other issue, Chairperson, is the issue of transformation. Our duty is to ensure that there is transformation in our sphere of work. So it's important for NPOs or NGOs to ensure that they transform. We can't extend a people who apply for government money, have it, and in some instances, double dip, but also not transport. When you have maybe an NPO or NGO in town, you must be working with local people, and they must be involved, even in the boards. They must not only be a worker, but they must be involved at a managerial level as well as at a board level. So we think this is very much important. And one other thing that we found out is that NGOs are not, we have not linked them up properly. Because if you are an NGO, we must be able to link you up to your work at a work level. That is where IDPs come in. We must link you up from a local level to a district, to a province, and then national. Because you can't just be flying an NPO. And maybe we need to say there are a lot of challenges in this area. Because people have been doing as they please, but we're trying to ensure that we align all or different sectors. And for instance, if the disabled, we must realign them. Children, realign and know who is doing what. Not what do they call these shops in the rural areas? Where you get everything.
Co-op,
yes. Where you get a penny for and what. You must realign them properly so that people can deliver proper services. Ensure that there is no duplication, and also people should not work in silos. When I raised the issue of silos, it's the weakness of the department, because we've looked into this. For instance, we are trying to link up community development, NPO section, and welfare services. Because one, people, you find out that they go to community development, they apply for an NPO certificate, and wait for 6 months if they want to run an institution, because you must be accredited to run an institution. Wait for 6 months. But also one other thing that we found out was that, for instance, provinces issue out forms to people, and when they bring them to national says, no, we can't take these forms because they are not supposed to be like this. To give you an anecdote, one day I went to the office and I saw someone I knew who works for the SACC. And then later it came to my mind that I did not greet her. I then asked the staff to call her to the office. She came in to greet me and I said, "What are you doing here?" She says, "No, I've been asked to go back to the province or to go back and fill in a new form because the province gave me a wrong form." Mm-hmm. I then called the staff man or the official to ask, "What is this?" And she says, "No, ma'am, she filled in a wrong form." And I said, "But whose fault is this?" And he says, "It's the province's fault." And then I said, "No, why are we not taking this form? Because it's not a fault." And then he says, "But a man, he must fill in a correct form." I then said, "If either you lose this job or you take this form and assist this woman, I think there has been those imbalances and problems." And also, some of the issues that we don't want to acknowledge. You see, welfare services, community development, it's full of women. So it's easy to push women from pillar to post.
Yes.
So if you are not organized, women will always have to go at their home, and they hire transport to come to an office because there's no, it's a lot of money. So you have to try and say to your people, "Look, we can't work like this." So we have also addressed that matter because we had a meeting quickly to address that. So community development, if they issue a certificate to someone who wants to run a facility. They communicate directly with welfare services so that they can process that quickly. Because it takes a long route if it's left like that, and the mentality of styles, because this was supposed to be corrected from the work ago. One other thing that I would like to raise is that the Deputy Minister has already started with her program of taking ESD to the people. And it's mainly on community development. There are issues that we want to highlight with communities, and she is driving the program, though she was a little bit, or she was greatly disturbed when she started with her first visit to Limpopo. But that one has already taken place, and it's going to continue as soon as possible. I also want to say there is no province that is perfect when it comes to this. So what we are trying to do is to try and bring provinces to the same level, because I don't want to talk about what is happening in this province and that province and the other province. In some of the provinces, monies are taken from a well-established NGOs and from poor communities, and monies are given to affluent communities. So this is something we want to address. And to show that we are very serious about this matter, the MINMET for social development is not just going to be a MINMET, it's going to be a council. So that if we take a decision, it is implemented like that. Because in some of the provinces, they say, no, we can't implement this decision because we have a premier. And when the constitution is very clear on those matters, so we opted for a council like education and health so that our decisions can be implemented properly. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister. Honourable members, we need to be out of this room. I'm just letting you know. You know, I said earlier in the room, there will be another round. We need to be out of this venue by 4:42. Minister, can you just put your microphone, please? Sorry, by 4:41. By 4:41, it's now 11:45. And we still have three presentations to make. Can I please request that we this last session, our last session, we are going to be 10 minutes to it. And then we need to go to the NAC of Rolex. Okay? Honourable Member Nabula?
Thank you, Chair. I cannot agree more with this problem that I'm not going to take on monitoring, evaluating, assessing, and assisting of NPOs. It was badly neglected by all departments, and especially the media, and no, because I've got files on these things. My question is, and it's rather a very interesting question that I picked up in a South African yearbook that I received yesterday or something, yesterday, and it reads that NPOs have a major role to play in identifying, developing, and implementing programs and projects that promote social development. In this respect, the department made an additional allocation of 70 million from 2010 to 2013, to strengthen the capacity and efficiency of the NPO registration unit, including the recruitment of additional personnel. My question then is, how much of this funding was spent up to now, and did recruitment of additional personnel took place? Thank you.
Yes. I noted the 2 minutes, most of it only after 2 minutes.
Umbuzo wami nje uzoqondana mayelana nendaba yama-social worker. Ama-social worker Chairperson, ngifuna ukwazi ukuthi yini umsebenzi wayo phakathi kwe-community, because i-community iyasokola, kunabantwana bamantombazane abazigrubhayo beyohlala endaweni eyi-1 iflow yomuzi awusenabazali njengoba abazali beshona. Bahlala endaweni eyi-1 bagilima ikhuba bayeka izikolo ukufunda. abazali beye police station ithi police station akusumsebenzi wayo umsebenzi wama social worker beye kuma social worker athi ama social worker no he has nothing to do about it manje le community ayishone kuphi ngoba abantwana basashaya ukuzowami loyo nje. Thank you. In Kalfatin there is a house that is full of girls. Abazali balabantwana ifiye yabo ukuthi sebene problem ukuthi maybe abantwana banga ndapha bedayisa umzimba lapha noma bebhema ama drugs the way behleli ngakhona eKalfatin eEbony Park. Ama social worker say 3 goniwe police station athi ayiphi into angayenza ngalento. Bengifuna ukwazi ukuthi azikhona indlela or imithetho eyabekwa ukuthi umntwana uma esezitoli ngendlela ukuthi ushiye isikolo e-under age ama-social worker umuphi umuntu ofanele awusebenzise ukuze la bantwana bangene endleleni bangayekwa nje. Ngiyabonga.
Okay, I'm going to try to check this in. The question was to find out the role of social workers in cases where the underage children, they leave school and then they go and do wrong things, or maybe they go and occupy certain houses and maybe they may be at risk of abusing drugs and prostitution. And when social workers take those cases to the police they always say they nothing to do about that. So she wanted to know in such cases what can be done, what can the department advise that should be done.
Can you control your microwave and your microphone, and you have to ask my permission to talk.
Oh, okay, sorry, Chair. Through you, Chair, I want to make a follow-up. Ngithe umama abantwana abazigrubhile endlini eyi-1 kwashona abazali lapho akunabazali kunomntwana ntombazane usethathe bonke abantwana bayeke isikolo bahlala kulowo muzi. Abazali baye e-police station. Police station athi akusumsebenzi ethi umsebenzi wama-social worker. Ama-social worker athi they have nothing to do about it. Manje umbuzo wami uthi kanti azikhona indlela zemthetho ey'bekelwa ama-social worker indlela afanele asebenze ngawo ukulungisa isimo esifana nalesi phakathi kwe-community because abazali bane-fear yokuthi abantwana benga-endapha bezifaka kwizidakamizwa noma bedayisa imizimba. Nayo inkinga ebhekene nabazali abantwana basashayo abazibenze njani. Thank you.
Okay, now I got it, Jess. Okay. Honorable Chairperson, member is asking about a case where the parents died and the children were left alone, and because there is no supervision, and now she wants to know, is in the legislation, does it not make provision for the social workers to help those children? Because the community or the parents in the community are worried that those children, they may end up abusing drugs or maybe getting involved in prostitution. Because when they go to the social worker, they're often told that they can't do anything in terms of helping that household. So the point is, there is a legislation that makes provision for that, but it seems that it's not being implemented in this case.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member Garo, Honorable Member Kopane, and
thank you, Chairperson. I'm having two questions here. The first question is regarding the provincial estimate on the expenditure table in different provincial legislation. Especially several months ago, it indicated that several provincial legislature there's a serious underspending in their allocation, especially for child care and support programs. Now the question that arises is why these amounts were that the government cannot use, why were they not transferred to the NPOs to enable them to do or to render a better service, because that is what was allocated for. My second question is regarding transformation and equity. In terms of equity, the present situation is that services that are rendered by government are funded with a lot of money, than those are rendered with the NPO to still be given a little money. That is one of the judgments of the Free State High Court. Now, according to the presentation here this morning, I don't see, it doesn't show how are they going to resolve the situation. Thank you, Chair.
Just to remind Honourable Kupane, in terms of provincial oversight, the Minister of Social Development can't be held accountable for provincial expenditure on social development. The only competence that the Minister has is with SASSA that operates in provinces and the NDA, but she can't be held accountable or explain expenditure to this committee with regards to provincial expenditure by provincial social development departments. Yeah, but I explained to you that you can't expect the Minister to answer, and I don't expect the Minister, I'm making the ruling that the Minister won't respond to that question because it does not have relevance, and it does, it's not in her competence as a Minister. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. Some of the questions have been asked by members, but just a few, and also to comment on what the Minister has just said about, as she said, that the provinces are not really on par with the implementation. And noting that it is said that we want to see, acknowledge to see that on bullet number 14, we said that we want to see that services are effectively and efficiently delivered. Now, my question is that can't, on this policy implementation plan, I understand that there were cluster workshops in three provinces. Is there no need for dissemination of these workshops to districts and locals, noting that there are still gaps which are there, as Minister has just identified a problem about the form not being fit, the right form not being fit. Maybe there's a need also, yes, I understand, about the capacity of the employees, but also about the information to see that even the people, even if there's enough consultation and information to the people following the Bartubulu principles. And again, on slide 14, we're talking about the partnerships. Now, I'm concerned about this partnership. Is it not proper if we say we want to ensure that governance of organizational structures really represent the demographics of the community they serve? Is it not proper to engage also Department of Rural Development to see that there is information? For example, noting that also the Tucson Service Centers are not equitably shared according to the provinces. As you see that, to make an example, in Eastern Cape, even the Tucson Service Centers are in the same area. So four of them are in Transkei, to make an example. So only one is in another district. If we can also make sure that even the Department of Rural Development is there to see that the rural poor also benefit from these policies. And lastly, the Chairperson has just alluded on the monitoring and evaluation. I'm also concerned because the reason why there are problems down there, maybe it's a lot of dissemination, because the monitoring and evaluation, to my understanding, is at provincial level. If we can also do the same to fill the gaps by letting those disseminate also to the districts and locals and the chairpersons.
To some service centers, Honourable Minister, falls to the ambit of the Department of Justice and Affairs. Honourable Member Bula.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that the issue of competence and skills at the grassroots levels is of paramount importance. I am glad that the Honourable Minister has touched on the issues of well-established NGOs and those that are very poor. Now, I'd like to know, Honorable Chairperson, is that the department quite correctly funds the activities of an NGO. And quite often you find in the rural areas that various projects are incomplete because the members of that organization tend to move away because there's no such incentives, and they're under the perception that perhaps they might be given some sort of incentive and remain in that component so that that project can be completed. Now, that is one of the challenges in the rural areas. What kind, perhaps, the question would be, is there any area of some sort of incentives for these people? Because they will leave from one project to another simply to seek for employment. Thank you.
Let me now
hand
over to the Department of GDC.
Sorry, over to the Department of Social Affairs. Time for a tea break. Thanks, Chairperson and members of the committee, Minister and Deputy Minister. With regards to the question that was raised by Honorable Lamula on the amount of money the GST got for the registration of non-profit organizations. Indeed, it is true. For this financial year, we had an extra 5.2 million for the appointment, improvement of capacity for the registration of NPOs. The process is underway, and you realize that it has improved much from what it was in the previous financial years, with also the establishment of the coordinating capacity for provinces. It also goes in terms of the coordinating approach where provinces take responsibility to assist non-profit organizations or CBOs, those that are coming up to register, support the registration at the local level. Recently we published a brochure which tells you if you are in Western Cape and you have got a problem with registration, this is the number you must phone in Western Cape in the department so that they can assist you with the form. They can assist you to say, to check whether that form is complete so that it should not come to Pretoria and come back again. That is what we have. Also, in each province, we requested for the community development practitioners to go to the most rural area. Once they profile the area, identify the needs, and those CBOs to be assisted to be able to register. Indeed, that is taking place. It might not have taken place boom at a time, but it's what we are on. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. On the question regarding the funding of NGOs, the facilities run by NGOs and those that are run by government disparity in terms of funding. Yes, I think it is one of the issues raised by the state for judgment, and it is a fact. NGOs, I think there are those disparities. Tamaritwa in her presentation touched on the costing models and the funding models, which we are addressing. This issue is high on the agenda of the heads of departments meeting to discuss it. We finalized developing the costing models. We will be working on the funding model, which will inform us correctly so that we address this. There are a number of other disparities that we're also looking into in terms of funding itself. Yes, it is one of the issues that has been raised in the country. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I'll respond to the matter raised by the
Honourable Member, with regards to children who have left school, I'm not sure whether she said they're uncontrollable children as per legislation, and that they've left school, they're just loitering and getting into trouble and involved in risky behaviour, but the police, both the police and the social workers, say there's nothing that they can do. The legislation is very clear, Chairperson. If you look at Section 150 of the Children's Act, it does define, you know, those children falls under one of the definitions, that children who I'm trying to look at the actual wording, but these are children who are in need of care and protection. So it means that the social workers must investigate. If the children are really under the age of 18, they have to follow what the legislation is. They have to do an investigation and find out what is the situation and make the proper recommendation in terms of the intervention. Whether those children have to be removed and placed somewhere in an alternative care placement, or their family will need to be counseled on how to manage the children. There are many options, whether they can be go into, they should be in foster care, residential care, or other place where they will be safe and be able to attend school. I don't believe that the social workers, you know, should really be saying that there's nothing they can do when the legislation is there to guide them on what they should do. The work of the social workers most of the time is guided by the legislation. All the work that we do, services to older persons, to children, to substance abuse, it's only in some cases where with people with disability where there's legislation, but children with disability are also covered by the Children's Act. If they don't know what to do, they pull up one of those legislation. What does it say? How must I work on this? We've got guidelines, we've got, you know, regulations on what they should do. So what I'll recommend that maybe we can give us the details of those, that family, so that we can follow up with the province on the service delivery to those children.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. We will now go over to NICLSS presentation. Thank you very much for that presentation, Madam. Also, that to be the National Library Forum. Then we can give us a 5-minute conference, right? Yeah.
Of course, I couldn't get Excuse, ek het jou naam vroeger gehad, maar houd ek het nie meer nie.
Ek Lana. Ek was die vorige PLO, maar ek het nou ek is nou administrator, en ek is Lana Petersen. Ek het by een of ander...
Ja, ek was vroeger jare in die kaap was gebaseer, so dit moest het gewees.
Ek was 1994.
Die vader is baie slag georganiseer. Ek wacht nog vir een venue en een tijd. Ek het hulle kon het gegeven.
Is het?
Zijn jullie voor de eerste paar minuten af? Please be seated, because it's the officials and our stakeholders that are still standing. But I can see the mic on you.
No answer. I can't see her.
I want to remind members that we are actually time constraints and also our stakeholders. We are not allowed to go over time because we also have a women's parliament today, and all the women in this committee are expected to be at the women's parliament. So we won't be compromising on any time. It's a very bad day for you to ask us anything. So we need to go to the women's parliament. Can we keep over to our next stakeholder? The NCLWS. Can you introduce yourself and your team? That's it.
Chairperson, Honourable Minister, Honourable Members of the Committee, all the stakeholders, my name is Willie van der Merwe. I'm the Chairperson of the National Coalition for Social Services, or as we usually refer to ourselves, NACOS. And on behalf of our organisation, I... Willie van der Merwe. Thank you, Chair. I want to thank you for the opportunity to attend this meeting and to present our concerns regarding the financial awards policy to the Portfolio Committee. I did submit the presentation to the Secretary, and I believe that it was circulated to all the members, and I will stick to the presentation. You will see that the presentation consists of three sections, and I'm starting with the introduction just to introduce the NACOS to you. The National Coalition for Social Services, known as NACOS, acts as an advocacy, lobbying and communication body for 20 non-profit organizations in the social welfare and development sector. And in Annexure 1, you will find a complete list of all the organizations. The majority of these member organizations are umbrella bodies or national councils who in turn represent more than 3,000 affiliate service rendering organizations. Some of these affiliated organizations are also members of the National Welfare Social Services and Development Forum as well. The services that are rendered included services to children and youth, families, women, older persons, persons with disabilities, the homeless, people abusing alcohol and drugs, and people affected and infected by HIV and AIDS. And may I also add programs regarding poverty alleviation. The developmental approach is followed and services are directed at enhancing the capacities of people to address the causes and consequences of poverty and vulnerability. The affiliates of the member organizations named in Annexure 1 and the CBOs they support can be found in the cities, but also in many rural and deep rural areas. The members of NACOS are deeply committed to the transformation of the social welfare sector and the directions set out in the White Paper on Social Welfare. They are also strongly committed to serve all the people of this country, especially the most vulnerable and those trapped in poverty. NACOS entered into a formal memorandum of understanding with the National Welfare Forum and a few years ago, and the Joint Strategic Committee, also referred to as JSC, was formed. The JSC agreed to speak with one voice on the most burning issues that face the NPO social welfare sector, namely the financing crisis, the partnership with the state, the human resource crisis, the transformation and the strengthening of the sector. A structure where the JSC could discuss these issues with the Department of Social Development was also established in 2009. The second section is regarding objections that we have to the process that was followed by the Department of Social Development. The financial challenges that NPOs in the social welfare sector are facing were raised in many letters and memoranda to the Department of Social Development, as well as in the discussions between JSC and the Department. In 2010, the JSC learned that the Department was planning to revise the current policy on financial awards and offered its assistance. The JSC then compiled a position paper which was handed to the Department, who from each side undertook to engage with JSC in further discussions. This never happened. Furthermore, the members of JSC are not aware of any discussion or consultation with the NPO sector regarding the revision of the policy. A letter to register JSCs this May with this situation was sent to the Department of Social Development, with a copy of this letter being forwarded to the chairperson of this committee on August 19 of this year. The third section regarding the concerns. NACOS believes that the department still does not sufficiently understand the financial challenges the NPO sector faces, and that the revised policy will not address the current funding crisis in the social welfare sector. The revised policy will not assist the sector with delivering equitable or sustainable services to those that need it most, particularly those in rural areas. In the limited time available, NACOS wants to highlight its main concerns regarding the revised policy on financial awards. Firstly, the policy does not present a definite strategy or any practical solution to the current crisis. In Chapter 1, the policy is described as a general statement of intent. Mention is also made of certain tools that still need to be developed, for example, a uniform funding model and NPO guidelines. Secondly, NACOS is of the opinion that the tendering concept, which is fundamental to this revised policy on financial awards, can only be applicable to very specific situations. For example, to start up new projects or programs. To tender for the financing of programs on an annual basis, with the possibility that a tender may not be awarded, will neither facilitate the development of sustainable services in communities, nor empower communities to start services. We acknowledge that the policy mentions other support to emerging organizations, But what that support will be and how it will work is not spelled out. Thirdly, the policy clearly states that financing is seen as a mechanism to bring about transformation. NACOS's position is that a transformation agenda should be separated from the funding debate. The transformation of the sector, as described in the White Paper on Social Welfare, goes much further than the funding of services and sees the department as part and parcel of the sector and therefore the transformation agenda. In the past, NACOS called many times for a comprehensive discussion on the transformation of the sector and also suggested that a separate policy regarding this should be developed. We are aware of the fact that bits and pieces of such a policy can be found in various policies, for example, the integrated service delivery model, the policy on financial awards, etc., but that does not suffice. Fourthly, NACOS fully agrees with the policy that organizations currently excluded from financing should be included. Many of our members are already involved in supporting or developing emerging organizations, especially in rural and far remote areas, with the aim of bringing them into the system. However, NACOS strongly believes that a policy to redirect or to redistribute the already overburdened and totally inadequate budget for social welfare services, service delivery, cannot reach the desired outcome, namely optimal service delivery. Previous attempts to do this did not succeed, and there is no evidence that it will work this time. What is needed is a policy for the progressive growth of the social welfare sector without downsizing such essential services as childcare, social work services, etc., which are currently under threat. Our fifth concern, the conceptualization of partnership in the policy is confusing. In the glossary attached to the policy, partnership is defined as a cooperative effort between government, civil society, and the business sector to deliver services. The policy also acknowledges the NPO sector as central to the delivery of social services. The tender concept, however, reduces the understanding of partnership to a relationship of buyer and tenderer, or seller, one can say, the service providers. Even the title of the policy reflects the specific understanding of such a relationship. In the light of the ongoing role that civil society organizations can and do play in social welfare service delivery, it is of the utmost importance to reach a generally accepted understanding of a sound partnership in social welfare. Our sixth concern, another critical flaw in the devised policy is the fact that it does not contain a strategy to grow the existing budget for social welfare services. We appreciate the recognition in the policy that the financing of the NPO sector is minimal when compared to the demands and realities for effective service delivery. NACOS also appreciates the clear preference for program financing in accordance to norms and standards determined by the department and specific acts. We believe that this is a step in the right direction. But in order to reach this goal, a well-managed strategy to expand the budget for social welfare is critical. And we believe that the Department for Social Development, assisted by NPOs, must take the lead in this. And Chairperson, before I conclude, I want to answer your question on capacity that you also put to our sector. And I want to answer it on three levels. Firstly, the NPO Act, or compliance to the NPO Act. As far as I know, all our members do comply yearly by sending all the reports that is expected from us. And we do have the capacity to do that. The second level is the contractual obligations, or the service level agreements, as it is also known. And as far as I know, all our members are still in a position to do that, to oblige to that contracts. The one problem is that the M&E processes are so expanded that many, many, many social workers are overburdened by the administration. And the point that was raised earlier in this committee meeting, that one should streamline the M&E function, is of utmost importance. Otherwise, we will end up with social workers sitting in offices doing administration all the time, and no work can be done in the fields, or very little work can be done in the fields. And the last capacity issue is around service delivery. And Chairperson, I think this is where our main concern lies. The social workers in our organizations are really overburdened and overstretched, and they are not in a position any longer to do good work. And I think that is what our communities are asking for, and members, honorable members of this committee, already raised this morning a number of issues pertaining good quality services, and we are really concerned that this is no longer the case, at least within our part of the sector. May I conclude then, point four, that the NPO social welfare sector in our wheel has come to the point where both steps need to be taken in order to secure its future and ensure that equitable services are provided to all. The policy on financial awards to service providers is clearly a crucial component in this course. We therefore acknowledge the leadership shown by the Department of Social Development to revise the existing policy. However, NACOS believes that a mere revision of the existing policy is not enough. And I argued earlier why we are saying it. In the spirit of partnership, as defined in the policy as a cooperative effort, NACOS proposes an open consultation, inclusive of all role players in the social welfare sector, with the aim to reach consensus on, firstly, the partnerships in social welfare. Secondly, the transformation of the social welfare sector. Thirdly, the needs of the people of the country for social welfare services. And fourthly, the resourcing of the social welfare sector, particularly pertaining to organizations of civil society. On behalf of NACOS, I really want to thank you all for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, very fellow member, for the submission. Honorable members, I rely on the opportunity of questions and clarification. Honorable members.
Thank you, Chair. I see that NACOS has built the organization. I just want to know where it is.
Chair, my comment is that all the inputs that we have are of critical importance for us to assist or allow the department in some way or another to achieve their goals. And you know, as I'm sitting here, I'm honest when I say I get more and more frustrated, because it is crucial information that is given to us, and there was just not time enough to work through this.
I'm still wondering, I put the question on the budget, if the budget will allow us to proceed with the policy or the policy implementation. I don't think I had an answer, clear answer on it. All my questions are asked, there are no clear answers on that. Which actually makes me more frustrated, and I would rather ask that the next presentation be not to be done and allow us to work through our presentations before coming back to do justice. We are not the ones that's going to solve. It is the NPOs that are backing our way, it is the people working within the NPOs. That is, as the Honourable Minister once said, doing 60% of implementation of legislation that we need to consider. So I feel we cannot proceed any further with what we need to do. We need time to scrutinize, because more and more questions come up and I can't ask them because I will not be allowed by you, and I clearly understand you. So I don't know what we're going to do. I'm really very frustrated.
Hello, Honourable in terms of the still have time, we still have 45 minutes so that we can listen to the other presentations. what we're not going to do today as a committee, and as many folks in the department and the stakeholders here today, is to deliver it as a committee in terms of our report of Parliament. That we will need for another day. I've got some questions on page 3 of your presentation. And I want to, refer you to page 6. if you listen to I found this here today as a future subject in the community while the Department of Social Development made the presentation. Now, in terms of your statement here, another critical flaw in the revised policy is the fact that GASA contains a standard of growth that exists in the budget for social welfare services. What is your opinion as an organization on uniformity or subsidization of certain services? I didn't pick it up. If I did, you would be referring to that section. Precisely because it will then have impact on the budget of social services. Now, as you know, in terms of the budgetary process, you can take medical decisions in accordance with the Department of Social Development. They will have to reconcile that to the National Treasury. It will then be at the behest of National Treasury with the duty of money part. And I think as a committee we also spoke about the state of welfare infrastructure. In the country. Now when you talk about welfare infrastructure, you refer to all infrastructure that relates to the delivery of developmental wealth. Social welfare service, and it's a principle in terms of delivering developmental welfare services. It's also a principle that you adhere to, that you endorse as an organization. So, in terms of incorporating policy, the growth in policy, especially in financial terms, it's also a process that has to be endorsed by National Treasury and Cabinet. And from the policy, it actually also goes into an act minister, if I'm correct, because each policy needs to be processed. So it is definitely a process that does end with the writing of the policy, it goes further than that. I think it was Dr. Ventura that made the comment to say that this is not the end of the road, but there is still an engagement ahead. So I think we need to give those time at the end of our sessions that we're going to have
we need to get that kind of sense in terms of where are you going, where is the department going, what is their goals, what we've had, and our recommendations in terms of what we see as community around it. So if you can respond to those issues that I've raised. The fact that
thank you, Chairperson. First question on the coverage of our services. My apologies for that omission. We do cover all 9 provinces with service delivery, our members. I don't have a breakdown of all the districts, but at least we don't have we have service in all the provinces. On point 6, Chairperson, we would really welcome the day, and we will have a big party if we can reach the stage where we have an act supporting the financial rewards policy or the financing of the social welfare structures, especially in the NPO section. That is what we are asking for, and you will find it in many documents that was already presented over the last couple of years to the department. We also welcome a uniform costing model, and that was also a part of our requests to the department for many years. A lot of our members participate in the process to develop these costing models and the norms and standards with input from our side, and we are still prepared to go on to do input and to make presentations to the department to develop those costing models and structures that is needed. What we think is, Chairperson and honorable members of the committee, what we believe is that we must engage in a process where civil society or the NPO sector and government sits together around the table and develop a bid to National Treasury on behalf of the sector. We are prepared to bring all the information to the table that we have, and that can be information, as I've indicated, of very, very deep rural areas, because our affiliates and member organizations do have those profiles available. We can bring that to the table. But what we think must be done is we must have a comprehensive bid to Treasury showing them what is needed in this country. And that is part of our proposal in the very last paragraph. An open discussion to reach a consensus of what are the needs and how are we going to resource it and how can we assist from our side. And may I make a last point, because it's also raised in the policy. From the NPO sector, we strongly believe and we acknowledge that the department allows it, that we have our own identities, that we have our own autonomies. And therefore we believe that we must fundraise for some of our services. And we do it. And we will continue to do it. And we will assist each other to raise funds, because we believe that it is not only the government that must foot the bill. Civil society must also do something. Thank you.
Otherwise, we're going to do cross-sections in terms of our presentations. Can you just note that so that we can then, when we deliberate on our issues, we can then say we need to be talking back to the respond to certain issues.
any more questions? Thank you very much, it was very insightful presentation. The analysis that you've done, I see a lot of work of God in your presentation. In terms of your analysis of the policy, especially in terms of stakeholder relationships. Then we'll go over to the National Welfare Fund. Who's representing the Welfare Fund?
Thank you, Chair. Zama Mabaso, and representing the National Welfare Forum, and my colleague is Mike Tieto. Honorable Minister, thank you for having us here and giving us a chance to come and present our case on our concerns about the new financing awards policy. And Deputy Minister, sorry about the question on protocol of resources of the country is strongly supported by the National Welfare Forum and is a fundamental aspect of the Freedom Charter. We must, however, be ensured that this policy needs to reflect a clear commitment by the government to ensure adequate funding for the social welfare, social services and development system as a whole to enable it to fully implement its constitutional, legal and policy mandate. The current huge shortfall in such funding for basic human development in South Africa should be a critical issue addressed by the policy. Finally, we urge government to take seriously the suggestion for a national dialogue of the nature and extent of transformation in the sector and begin the process to envision, consult and develop an overarching legislative framework to ensure the broad human development goals can be set out and agreed upon so that we may all work together to meet that elusive goal of social cohesion in South Africa. The National Welfare Forum welcomes the release of this revised version of the financing policy by the Department of Social Development and wish to acknowledge the positive shifts since 2004 policy, particularly with regards to an explicit acceptance of the government's responsibility for the funding of core social welfare services, and a move away from discretionary post and per capita subsidies to an approach based on actual core costs of services according to properly developed costing models. At the same time, there is still a lack of attention to a number of key concerns raised by non-governmental organization networks in relation to the 2004 document and its 99 predecessor, with the result that they cannot yet be full agreement on this policy by civil society stakeholders. It should be noted that the very tightly financial awards policy in itself is objectionable to many NGOs, as has been pointed out in the past. It implies that government's role in this regard is that of benefactor rather than reflecting the nature and extent of the partnership in delivering the mandate of the White Paper of 1997.
We also wish to highlight a key challenge that have remained since the introduction of previous versions of the policy since 1999, and that we feel will serve as a crucial guiding beacon in making this a policy that is both useful and well received by the NGO sector and the people we serve. The revised policy fails to recognize the lack of any impact legislation for the provision of social and development services in South Africa. This lack of a valid reference point means that even this revision of the policy is haunted by the same weakness of essentially being a band-aid solution to a much wider and deeper challenge for South Africa. This policy is not just about finding ways to fund organizations delivering essential services. It is about how we think about and go about ensuring that human development is placed at the center of efforts to build a better country. I would also go through the chapter-specific comments that the National Welfare Program has made in reference to the policy that is really developed. Comments on specific sections follow. Where no comment is noted, it can be assumed that the National Welfare Program is in broad agreement with the content of the document. Let's look at chapter 1. Which talks to the overview and the last paragraph in page 6, where a statement is made to the effect that alignment of NGO services with the government's transformation objectives has regrettably not been the general trend. No evidence is provided for the statement, which we find unfair, inaccurate, and offensive. In the 2004 document, research results were misquoted and distorted to reach the same conclusion. This time, this statement is simply made without providing any basis at all. And suggest that the OSD make time to meet with officials of NACOS and the National Welfare Program to discuss this matter and design a research process to ensure that the issue of transformation is addressed. And we also look at page 7, the second paragraph. This same unsupported assumption is made here, along with the conclusion that transformation mechanisms must therefore be tightened. The point was made by the NGO in relation to similar statement in the last document that such an approach being based on incorrect premises, in fact, has no positive effect to those sorts. We will explain this in due course. Also, we look at the context. On page 8 and 9, what does not come across in this document is the point that responsibility for ensuring that a comprehensive social welfare system is in place countrywide rests squarely with the government. While civil society organizations are available to assist, government is at liberty to enter partnerships with them. It's not surprising if more such organizations are operating in urban than in deep rural areas. It is in the nature of NGOs that they are initiated by people in response to needs that become apparent to them in their immediate environment. This happens more readily in urban areas, whereas more resources are available for such initiatives. The logical approach by government in this situation is to prioritize areas where NGOs are not operating for the development of its own services, and or to enter into partnership with available NGOs and finance their expansion into the rural areas. What makes no sense at all is to blame the urban NGOs for the lack of rural services and fail to fund them adequately on the basis that they are historically well established. A great many of these organizations are in fact, despite the impression to the contrary that is created in the document, targeting disadvantaged communities in poor inner cities, low-income communities, informal settlements, and deprived communities, including the rural communities. In their current areas of operation, redirecting resources away from them merely further disadvantages the poorest and most vulnerable urban dwellers. This idea is based on an erroneous notion that historically well-established organizations serve more privileged people. Our submission is that this is not true. The system must indeed be strengthened in areas which served inadequately or not at all. But not this must not be done by bringing additional This must be done by bringing in additional resources and not by spreading the already thin layer of existing NGO resources even more thinly, making it increasingly inadequate for achievement of its objectives. So-called well-established NGOs are not beneficiaries, but they are service providers. The users of their services are poor, vulnerable, and marginalized people, and are entitled to the property provided, to be provided for. When the budget provided is insufficient, the approach should not be to redistribute within such a budget, but to increase the budget by redistribution from external sources so that the human rights of all the relevant services are upheld. Redistribution within the confines of the welfare system amounts to the redistribution not of wealth but of poverty and vulnerability. And we also look at the situational analysis in page 9. We welcome the recognition given here to the fact that the equality in salaries between government and NGOs is leading to drainage of social workers from the latter. The resultant instability of the national social development workforce is having a disastrous effect on sensitivity. The only viable solution is a financing system that enables NGOs to pay salaries at the same levels as government. In addition, recipients of bursaries should be allowed to fulfill their service obligations in NGOs as well as in the department. We also look at page 11, which looks at the profile of the NGO sector in South Africa. The statement that Section 21 companies, trusts and bodies organized at provincial and national levels are likely to be well-resourced is very misleading. The truth is that social welfare NGOs across the board are typically in a constant struggle for survival. The fact that community-based organizations are usually even worse off does not alter the situation. And we also looked at the page 12 and 13, which looked at the challenges. We agree that most of the issues identified here present challenges, including the lack of equity between the provinces in relation to their funding and overall dealings with NGOs. We welcome the recognition given to the fact that delays in the transfer of funds to NGOs are seriously problematic. With regard to the reference to multidisciplinary across the departments by NGO, we point out that NGOs are obliged to approach the multiplicity of resources of partial funding, as this is usually the only way to achieve full funding. This practice should only be regarded as unacceptable if dishonesty and or lack of transparency is involved. The statement about non-compliance to legislation is made without any clarification and could amount to an unjustified generalization. In what proportion of cases was such non-compliance found? And we also look at the scope of the policy on page 13. We fully identify with the stated aim of the PESP as set out here. However, we believe that this aim cannot be achieved without some fundamental changes in the current approach to financing. We also looked at page 14, which looks at the purpose of the policy. The notion of redirection of services is problematic because it is based on an unsubstantiated assumption that existing services are misdirected, an assumption which could result in the removal of resources from vulnerable people who are in need thereof. What is needed is expansion and improvement of the service system and replication of viable programs to ensure coverage for all who are in need. We fully agree that no person should be deprived of services because of unaffordability. But we emphasize this can only be achieved through financing that enables organizations not to be excessively dependent on fees. This in turn requires appropriate and realistic funding models to ensure that core costs are covered for persons who cannot cover their own. And ready for money can only be expected of an organization if it has sufficient funds to deliver a service of an acceptable standard. And we also looked at page 15, which looks at the issues of the objectives. And we recommend the inclusion of the following additional objective to ensure adequate national and provincial social development budgets to provide for a social welfare system of sufficient scope and quality to provide for the core service needs of all poor, vulnerable, and marginalized people of South Africa. I just want to state a concern that I've always stated of the issue of, we say, services to families are a priority by the department, but when you go to KZN, they only have set aside 3 million for the services of the entire province. And that is not accepted. Fundraising by organization can and should contribute to service delivery, but income thus generated is unpredictable and cannot be relied upon for co-expenditure involved in essential services or for the survival of organization delivering them. We also looked at page 15, which looks at the outcome of the policy. The reference to achievement within available resources should not be interpreted in such a way as to detract from the obligation of Treasury to set aside sufficient funds for the implementation of our country's constitutional, statutory and policy mandate with regard to the delivery of essential social welfare services. We looked also at the pages 16 and 17, which was looking at the values and principles, the battlefield principles. We fully identify with these values and principles that are set out here, but we've got a few qualifications that we've made. In relation to affordability, as already mentioned above, it is the state financing system that must ensure organizations that are compelled to charge fees do not have to turn people away because of ability to pay. As regards to redistribution of resources, we again emphasize that this must involve resources from outside the traditionally underfunded social welfare system. And also in regards to sustainability, in the vast majority of cases, there is no possibility of services in this sector becoming financially dependent of government. Service providers are delivering services on behalf of the government, and these will be, by their very nature, always have to be funded. And these services contribute to the sustainability of the overall economy by protecting and developing its human resources. They cannot be sustainable in and of themselves. We also looked at page 23 and 24 when we felt the issues of the list of policies and legislation, and we felt that these policies that are mentioned here, I don't have to go through them, but they have all of them to be financed accordingly. And we suggest that this should be added as well and be properly financed so that they can be properly implemented. We also looked at page 26, the roles and responsibilities of the department. We are in agreement with the list provided with the following qualifications. Priorities should be determined in consultation with civil society partners. The following should be added: ensure an adequate budget for social welfare service delivery. When we make mention of the consultation, time and again when we do our business plans, we find that when we've done the business plans, then the government official come, we need a set of deliverables that are not part of what has been agreed upon, and you're expected to implement them here and there. Yet if there was sufficient consultation, you'll be able to work in line with whatever are the needs of the government. We welcome the statement that payment of funds must be timely. On page 26 and 27, we looked at the roles and responsibilities of the NGOs. While we are broadly in agreement with this section, the following points need to be taken into account. Agency boards are made up of volunteers, and organizations are not able to control the availability of such people. It's not always possible to ensure that boards are fully in line with the demographics of the community itself. However, the principle that efforts to achieve this must be demonstrably accepted. In relation to the service level agreements, it should be stipulated that these must be supplied well in advance of signing, and that the content should be fully agreed by both parties, because most of the time, you see, we are rushed and we asked to come and sign the document and bring all your board members immediately, yet you've got to call these people to come in because they are in their independent jobs. So we need to have these things signed. Time as well it is now, we are still working with the service level agreement as we speak now, which we should have implemented already. Monitoring and reporting systems should be rationalized and considered across all spheres of government, should be fully ethical in respecting the confidentiality of service users, and should be appropriate to the needs of the sector. They should be designed in connection with the stakeholders. We are working with a horrendous monitoring system which is asking us to declare clients' IDs even if they are coming to services for very confidential issues. Yet the basic principles of social welfare, one of them is confidentiality. And those documents are thrown all over. You don't know who whose hands they left. Page 28, we looked at the transformation. We have tended to be left out of discussions around transformation, is the role that government itself must play, with the result that NGOs tend to be unfairly blamed for deficits instead of being given credit for provision of most of the available services. We suggest that there are at least two key responsibilities of the government in this regard that are not yet being fulfilled and are obstructing the process of transformation. That is, the government is responsible for ensuring that a comprehensive system of services is in place countrywide and is accessible to all who are in need. Where partnership can be developed with NGOs for this purpose, that it is to be welcomed. But the primary responsibility cannot be laid at the door of the NGOs, which in their very nature have limited scope. Each arises in a particular time and place where support can be accessed to address fair need, and each can only contribute to the extent of its resources. As already mentioned, government funding must be as such as to prevent exclusion from needed services of people who cannot afford to pay the fees. We looked at also at page 29, which looks at the criteria for measuring transformation. So the list of criteria for the department should be added, that of ensuring that there is adequate financing for the whole system. While it is crucial that emergency bills are supported, it's also critical that establishing NGOs are properly financed, as in general these bodies are serving the poorest and most vulnerable in the country, most of them also providing support and assistance to CBO. There has never in the history of South Africa been adequate state funding for social welfare services. The allocation of such funding should be regarded as a key criterion for transformation. We talk transformation and the government identify gaps, the organization move in and you wait for 5-6 years before you can get a post for that very gap that was identified by the government. Not all organizations have needed to redirect their services to previously marginalized communities as the poorest of the poor. Many of them have always worked in these communities. As mentioned above, it should be recognized that the availability and supply of volunteers is not always fully in line with the local demographics. Volunteers are a scarce resource and cannot be turned away on the ground of being the wrong color. In addition, staffing demographics have been seriously distorted by the department's practice of poaching black practitioners from the NGOs and by salary disparities between the government and the NGOs. You have to be the training organization all the time because you train people, they get to seniority level and then they fly because you cannot afford to pay for their salaries. The financial criterion mentioned of making of the organization less dependent on government is totally unacceptable. Most organizations are carrying out government responsibilities and government must continue to provide for these. It's not appropriate to demand a transformation plan for all organizations. Many, if not most, have long been fully transformed, and this requirement would just create unnecessary paperwork in an already overfunded system. Such a plan can just finally be required from any organization which can clearly be seen not to have transformed. We looked at page 31 and 32, which looked at service specifications and configurations. It's recommended that detailed national and provincial plans for services with associated targets be developed based on a comprehensive audit of social welfare in the country, and each province with a parallel audit of available services and gap analysis. This should also serve as the basis for bids to treasury. Reapplication services to offenders and attacked persons should also be entered to the list of service categories. We also looked at page 32, 33, which looked at the financing.
Listen, that is, this is quite a bulky. Could you maybe just speak to the rest of the five of us, because it's now 25 to 1. We're not too much.
Our policy brief on the quality of social services for all, this is page 11, because that's another issue that would really help the resources. This is the, it's called the quality social services for this is looking at the overarching policy on welfare, which is lacking in legislation framework, which is lacking in the country, which would really, if we focused on that, it would stop our woes of not knowing where we are sitting in terms of who needs to do what and where. Our perspective, the fundamental paradigm shift has taken place in terms of the approach towards social welfare services in South Africa. Welfare is transitioned with social inclusivity and its cornerstone to development social welfare. The key feature of this developmental social welfare approach are right-based, integrated social and economic development, participation and citizenship and partnership. That's according to Patel and Mitchley. 2004. This approach attempts to transcend remedial efforts and seek to bring about a balance between reputation, promotion, prevention, and developmental efforts, and still according to Quartet 2008, in order to adequately address the scale of poverty and inequity and make a meaningful contribution to its alleviation, a social development approach is needed. That's over 2007. A compelling need currently exists for the development of a legislative framework for social welfare and development services in South Africa. Thousands of civil society organizations provide core services in this arena, providing and contributing to a critical care for our people and communities. Right now, there is an absence of legislation regarding the functioning of the sector as a whole, including a partnership between government and non-profit organizations, which is crucial to service delivery. It's impossible to suggest that a development state can be built in the absence of this visionary legislation that defines the human development objectives of this country. A brief background. Historically, welfare services were racially fragmented with urban and gender bias. Past welfare legislation policies were grossly inequitable and ineffective in addressing poverty, equally leaving a critical mass largely black African in the poverty trap bereft of basic human needs. Subsequently, the apartheid legacy created a deeply divided society, sustained by a system of separation, unequal development, and segregation in almost all spheres of socioeconomic, political and cultural life, and the pre-1984 policy framework that governed the relationship specifically between social services and government was set out in the two laws, that was the National Welfare Act of 1978 and the Fundraising Act of 1978. Given the abuse of these acts to entrench the apartheid system so as to suppress anti-government activities, all but a few clauses were quickly repeated after the coming of democracy. While this action removed major distortions in abuses of the sector, that remains an absence of an appropriate legislation to clarify the responsibility of the social welfare sector, to identify the responsibilities of the three spheres of government in this regard, and to guide the relationship between the Department of Social Development and non-profit organizations, and to provide for the funding of these organizations and their projects. Also absent is proper provision for the registration of social welfare organizations, as opposed to the NPO, to the registration for NPO in general via non-profit organization act, which covers civil organizations in every sect. It does not address itself to the planning needs of the social welfare sector or its need to specific controls to address fraud and to protect vulnerable groups. In short, this proposed legislation picks up from where the white paper Welfare 1997 was left off. While some of the post-1994 policies have made great progress in terms of relieving poverty and delivering basic services, the twin scourge of poverty and unemployment still persists. This begs the question of what more needs to be done, and deeper research into areas of excellence and failures. The White Paper for Social Welfare highlights an important collective strategy in dealing with poverty and aversion that equitable social development is the foundation of economic prosperity and economic growth is necessary for social development. And this means that social and economic development as goals are mutually reinforcing and inextricably linked. Thus, social welfare would require an integrated and a comprehensive system of social services. And without social investment, and economic growth would be compromised. Given that government has not moved forward on the landmark policy proposal, it's vital for our ongoing development state agenda that we immediately revisit the key outcomes of the 1997 process and move forward with agency to ensure we fulfill our constitutional mandate to build a better life for all. On the basic proposal for this overarching legislative framework, building from the white paper, the development of an appropriate legal framework could have a huge and positive impact on social welfare and development sector as a start and contribute to the overall objective of building a development state. Such a framework could address areas such as defining the scope of social services, development and welfare responsibilities of national, provincial and local government. In relation to a development state agenda and realization of the MDGs, and framed by the imperative of addressing this ever-increasing poverty and inequality in South Africa, with cognizance of the economic growth required to sustain the current level of social security poverty. It will also provide a holistic legislative framework for the allocation of the NDA, the National Law Distribution, and specific allocations from the OGA and corporate social investment congruent with the development state agenda, and it will ensure maximization of the budgetary imperatives for such EMF development funds, a combined social and economic goals geared towards product developmental goals, continual building of research and evaluation, research capacity on impact assessment of social services, intervention and implementation of the new social policy, and setting clear parameters for partnership between government and NPO in service delivery, including the manner in which organizations are to be funded, and developing partnerships for graduation of social security grantees. And it will make provision for station provision for genuinely consultative processes between government and civil society for the implementation, for the planning and implementation of services, and a framework for ongoing monitoring and evaluation and constant service innovation in relation to the meeting the needs of the developmental state. Finally, such a framework provides a valuable tool for lessons of managing and implementing large-scale state-driven developmental initiatives that can be leveraged across other sectors such as environment and policy. And such a legislative framework should be designed to incorporate and consolidate several current owners' policy imperatives. A way forward that is suggested by the National Welfare Forum is that the White Paper for Social Welfare laid a solid foundation for further development of social and development services. And given the critical services provided by this sector to the most vulnerable people in our society. There is an urgent need to develop a new and a better legislative environment for the social welfare and development sector. The mandate of the social and development services sector is also continuously expanding to incorporate new challenges, such as the achievement of the MDGs. This proposed legislation is vital in strengthening key partnership between government, the private sector, and civil society. It will provide a synergized approach towards the building and sustenance of our envisioned development estate. And each sector clearly understands their role within the broader vision. The collective vision would give needed impetus to the vulnerable sectors of our society and provide a solid understanding that our development path must be built on coherent and collaborated efforts. We also reiterate our call to government to work with the civil society sector to take this important development imperative. And the last one talks about, I don't know whether our friends are going to go into that, but it talks to who the National Welfare Forum is. It's a body that has got a 3,500 member organizations that are affiliated to the National Welfare Forum and operating in online provinces.
That's fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. That's okay. That's just background information.
Thank you very much for your presentation. And we must be had five minutes for questions. Could you turn off your mic, please, Mr. Johnson?
It's not a question per se, but it's a concern. I think it is not justice for us to get documents here. Because now we have no chance to look over. If we can get documents prior to the meeting so that we can read on ourselves and come here with clear questions. Because now we end up sometimes getting a problem of getting it just now. That is why sometimes we even have no chance to check what we want to ask. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, I see, Martin, you came late into the meeting. We already made a ruling on that. We got the documents on the NGOs on Friday. It was disseminated Monday. Monday, most members are here. But the department submitted their submission late and we made a ruling on that.
Thank you. Sorry for that. I apologize.
But what we also said was that we're going to listen to the presentations, we're going to interrogate what you want to ask, and then we're going to deliberate more. So this is not just about listening, finishing, reporting. Because we would like to make a more meaningful contribution and our interrogation should be thorough before we come to a conclusion as a committee around the law policy issue. Any other member? Honourable Mukuba? Fifan? Namula? Honourable Menamula? Okay. Honourable Member Kupani?
Thank you, Chair. Mine is not a question, but it's a comment. Maybe to support the concern of the presentation here, that is the National Welfare Forum. I happen to be working for Cancer Association of South Africa for the past 10 years. It was regarded as a well-established organization, and many people believe that it was the organization that served the white people as the beneficiary. But it was totally wrong because people, they never go deeper to check what exactly where the organization is rendering its service. So I think on the basis of that, we need to make a thorough research when sometimes we want to discipline the organization, but to go deeper where they really render service and not base our judgment on the perceptions. So, thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure in the policy there is definition included that usually clarifies these issues of what is well established, because you can read it both ways. And if it's not there, I'm sure it has to be brought in. I think what you've seen from all the presentations is transformation. Now, you can read a lot into transformation. I think we all have our own ideas in terms of what is transformation. But I'm sure key to the transformation is making services accessible to all South Africans. And if you look at the transformation of the NGO sector, or even if you were to go wider in terms of the provisioning of developmental welfare services by the NGO sector, I'm sure we can have different opinions, because then you need to go look at substance abuse, home-based care, and so on and so on and so on. And like you say, even in terms of your hospice services. One thing that we can say is where you have services that previously were dominated by one population group, in some cases there has been real transformation. In some cases there has been artificial cosmetic transformation, and in some cases people really went out to cover all communities that they serve. Now, be that as it may, in terms of Mrs. Mabasa, you sometimes digress from the presentation, you added like the issue around confidentiality and so on. What I want to ask, you made the assumption, you made the allegation that government is not, that your reports that you give to government, especially in terms of your client base, not treated with confidentiality. Because I know that, and you said that there's a relationship of confidentiality between client, especially when you deliver statutory services on behalf of government, in terms of your client confidentiality with a social worker client, and that you are required in terms of the agreement that you have to provide the details of your clients, and that you say that these reports are just thrown around. Have you made any effort to speak to where you've seen the facts, or where it has been reported to you that the reports of your member organization have been treated with this kind of disrespect, to follow up on these issues? Because as a committee, that to us is of great concern. If you are saying that these reports are just lying around in government, departments of social development, I would like to know which departments are that, and which organizations lay those claims. So this committee can then look into that, because you also have today the benefit of the minister, the deputy minister, because she had an urgent dental appointment on the moment. But you also have the minister here, the minister of social development here today. You see, the one thing that I've picked up, and as a committee we've discussed this, is the issue of our Department of Social Development and organizations sitting down to discuss the issue, the terms of the service level agreement. Because even if you say, if you are suffering from, there is no regard for the confidentiality issue. Because accountability is accountability. There can be no compromise on accountability. But with what the kind of confidentiality and dignity the reports are being treated with, I want to know that issue. And then also, do your member organizations have regular meetings with these departments to look at the service level agreement in terms of its implementation from both sides?
Thank you, Chair. I would like to address the issue of confidentiality first. We are expected to submit ideas on our clients that we have dealt with. The nature of the problem that they
they have come through to your office for. I'm specifically talking to the experience that I had experienced as FAMSA in Durban, where my worker was expected to submit that non-financial statistical data information, which was putting the name, the address, the it was saying the name of the person, the address, and why was she at our office, and the issue was right. And my concern was if she was going to fax this information to the department, who was going to receive it, and what impact will it have on the client. So I stopped it right there, and I wrote to Dr. Mkhart to say, as from now onwards, because he's in charge of the division, we are not going to be sending that kind of information through to the department. Rather, if they would like to prove that we have seen those clients, our files are available in the office for them to verify that information. There hasn't been an agreement. In fact, I'm told I'm the only organization that is refusing to give this information, but I believe as a social worker, I need to appoint the client. And if one of the basic principles that I was taught in social worker is confidentiality, I should appoint that. So we do sit in forums, which is in the KZN we have the national, we have the KZN Welfare Forum and the Directors Network, and we have written to the department on a range of issues that we are concerned about, even on the issues of the, how we are made to sign with the SLA, because if you look at the SLA, it talks about program funding, yet you receive post funding, and it doesn't talk to each other. I had a meeting, I had an internal audit that was done on my organization a few weeks ago, where the person from Treasury came and said, yes, if then you are paid according to a post, why would then the department be asking from you all the reports? Because all they should be asking from you, that was somebody from the Treasury Department, all that they should be asking from you is whether you do have contracts with these people that you claim they're paying, and also show us the payslips, not the rest. Because if they have not paid the organization fully as we have presented your business plan, and only took the subsidy issue, the post issue in that whole entire funding proposal that you're putting, it's not justified for them to ask for everything. So we do meet and we do write to the department about these issues and raise our concerns as a sector. Thank you.
No, thank you. Is there any other questions? Honourable members, we've run out of time. I want to thank Mrs. Jamieson for really accepting that we will agree with us that we can do a presentation at a later stage because of our time constraints. I'm sure that we've listened to all that you've said in writing. We've taken our notes. I'm sure the minister has taken listen to what the stakeholders have also said at the officials. We're going to have, if I look at all the work that is ahead of us members, I think we're going to have another two sessions in this committee. So, thank you very much for coming, Mrs. Mbaso. Thank you very much for the presentation on behalf of the organization. It's much appreciated. Thank you very much, honorable members, minister, and team. The meeting's adjourned.
Thanks for raising.
Have you been informed about meeting on Friday?
Thank you.
can yeah. talk about as part of the NCPF or
no, as part of the JSC.
The JSC have been invited to the meeting on the website.
Not really invited. We raised it earlier on. We got a phone call from the secretary, asked for a date, which we supplied, and that's about it. So the final arrangements, I'm not.
Did you send that?
Not that one. The other one.
I think the panel emails. I'll make sure that.